Welcome to The Alternative Angle. My name is Alexandra Daly and I'm the CEO of AA Advisors Europe Limited. We're an independent placement agent and we're based in London, and we raise assets across the alternatives industry, in particular private equity, venture capital, real estate and hedge funds. Today I'm joined by Anne Glover, CEO of Amadeus Capital Partners. Anne co-founded Amadeus Capital Partners in 1997 with Herman Hauser. Building on her scientific training and operating experience, Anne has been an active venture capitalist for almost 30 years. Early in her career, Anne lived in the US, working in manufacturing with Cummins Engine Company and in strategy consulting with Bain & Company before returning to the UK to join Apex Partners in 1989 to invest in early stage companies. She became chief operating officer of one of her investee companies, Virtuality Group, after it listed on the London Stock Exchange in 1993. And then returned to investing as a business angel before founding Amadeus in 1997. A former chairman of the British Private Equity and Venture Capital Association from 2004 to 2005, and Invest Europe, formerly the EVCA, from 2014 to 2015, Anne is a member of the London Business School's Private Equity Institute Advisory Board. In 2018, Anne was appointed as a non-executive director on the court of the Bank of England. She joined the investment committee of the Yale Endowment in 2019. Anne holds an MA in Metallurgy and Materials Science from Clare College, Cambridge, and a Master's in Public and Private Management from Yale School of Management. She was awarded a CBE in 2006 for services to business and is an honorary fellow of the Royal Academy of Engineering. Her past successes at Amadeus include Optus and TCTI. Welcome, Anne. As I just mentioned, Amadeus has a 23-year track record that has seen many periods of market volatility, like the dot-com bust, the 9/11 attacks, and the 2008 global financial crisis. Anne, what lessons did you learn from your experience during the previous macroeconomic shocks, and how did you navigate the uncertainty?
Thank you. The most important thing that we did in each of those crises really is a portfolio triage. We basically looked at our entire portfolio, assumed that they would not be able to raise external capital for some considerable length of time, met 18 months, and what cash did we have to support them and where did we think that cash was best deployed? So this ended up being, that resulted in basically choosing the companies we really wanted to get behind and perhaps communicating to a few that we could no longer support them, but doing it early. So we did a portfolio triage as a group. The second thing we did, which fed into that triage, was work with all our company CEOs to figure out how they could preserve cash for themselves. So cut overheads, not necessarily cut people, because people are the foundation of a great business. And it may require salary sacrifice, but it was to try and keep the core of the business together while preserving cash. And to do it all with great respect. Any crisis is difficult and everybody is nervous. If there is bad news to be communicated, it needs to be done sensitively and early and with as much support as possible. So we were able to do that, and in some cases got people jobs in other portfolio companies. So it wasn't a slash and burn, but it absolutely was a preserve cash all the way through the system. Not because we didn't think our LPs would be there to support us, because they invariably were. But because we're closed-end funds, there's a finite amount of capital over a finite time. And we rely constantly on external capital. And the chances of getting a new investor interested in a company that doesn't know the company very well in the middle of a crisis is very low. So the insiders have to support the company, and that includes us. We also found out who our friends were. We also found out who the good co-investors were, who stood shoulder to shoulder with us, and those who didn't.
Some of today's most well-known tech companies were established in times of crisis. Are there any examples you can point us to within your own portfolio, or perhaps more broadly, that are testament to this?
Well, it's in some ways, because people will recognize these names, it's easier to point elsewhere. And it's really remarkable. If you go back in history, General Electric and Thomas Edison actually started their respective companies in a crisis. Microsoft was started in 1975, which was a crisis. But perhaps more interestingly and more recently, the WhatsApp was started in 2009. Uber was started in 2009. Slack was started in 2009. These are all household names. Square was 2009, and Instagram was 2010. These are all now absolute household names. So why does this happen? It happens because entrepreneurs are, first of all, risk takers. So they don't look at the current conditions as the future. They basically look at the current conditions as a time in which they can actually sit and plan and think and create a new product that is going to solve a problem that they have seen and will grow in the future. So it's a great time for creativity. And often the people have left jobs from other big companies and are literally working in groups of two or three, doing some amazing work in terms of thinking how to build a new product. And as they come out of as we come out of it, then they have to get seed capital, and that's where we come in. We are there to find the best teams with the greatest ideas and the greatest opportunity. So this time of thinking is really to be treasured in an odd way. Now, obviously, that's not so true for the health industry or the services or perhaps hospitality. But in tech, so much can be done from a laptop that it's really not a problem.
Indeed. And going along with that thought process, where do you see there being the greatest opportunities to invest within UK tech right now?
Well, all eyes are on health tech at the moment, but in particular, it's the application of AI and machine learning to big data, whether it's for epidemiological studies, but also for genomics and health analysis in general. We still do that, and we will still see that blossom. I mean, it even to the point, for example, one of our companies might be able to anonymously track mobile phone usage, so you can see whether the lockdown is being effective or not, whether people are actually at home, but without intruding on their privacy. The area that will also then become really important is cybersecurity and the management of privacy, because there's no question that there will be more monitoring and a need for more monitoring, and individuals will accept it, but we have to protect their personal information as well. We still see a lot in human-computer interfaces. I mean, clearly that's the simplicity of how well video conferencing is working in today's world, but to how you can communicate with robots in simple ways, which, for example, could be incredibly helpful in all kinds of applications around warehouses, but also even in care homes, so that you don't end up with exposing the staff as much. And novel materials, we are seeing quite a lot there where we are, or the opportunity is to create materials that are biodegradable and therefore solving the planet's plastic crisis. So we see all of these as areas of opportunity.
We've seen a big change in the way in which people do business. And although isolation is only temporary, there is a lot of commentary around this, perhaps accelerating a much longer term trend towards remote working. Are there any investments that you've made over the years into specific technologies and sectors that are doing particularly well out of the current situation and the shift to remote working?
Well, it's more to stay at home rather than necessarily remote working that comes to mind. So we've got an investment in a company called Baby to Body, which is an app that helps pregnant mothers figure out how to stay fit and eat well and look after themselves during the pregnancy. Now, clearly, they're all in lockdown at the moment, and that app is tripling its daily users because people want advice and they need it remotely. So it's a small example, but it's very relevant. I mean, and the irony there is, of course, that the ability to market and attract users is actually lower cost in today's environment because there's so much less and less activity. So you've got a win-win on both sides. It's easier to track them, and they're using it more. We're also seeing a company called Contact Engine get great demand for its services. And it's a SMS communication service between delivery truck rolls of any kind to a household. So it's largely used by telecom providers like Virgin or BT, where you're talking about how they install equipment, but it can apply to many things more. All kinds of engineering support or maintenance for white goods, etc. And the importance of this is every single truck roll is valuable in today's environment. And so reducing the number of truck rolls that fail because people aren't around is really important. And knowing that you can actually schedule things well and staying in contact with the customer so that they feel as if they have a relationship with you. So that is a very, again, it's a small company. These are all our companies are quite small, but it's communication technology that's enhancing the way in which we communicate in these difficult times. We also have a company in call center software. Now, call centers are actually really being attacked at the moment because obviously they're very crowded and you can't go in and be close together. And this, with automated technology, can answer the first screen of questions, which are easily interpreted from a natural language processing, and then only kick over to a much smaller group of call center operators when necessary. So they're not direct examples of remote working, but they're all examples of technologies that will improve the situation from where we are today.
And what do you anticipate to be the longer term effects of the COVID-19 situation?
Well, I mean, from our business perspective, the exits will come later. There's no question. It will take longer to build the businesses. But this is in the scheme of a venture capital landscape, this is a short term crisis. You know, the world will get on top of it. We will find a vaccine. I'm convinced of that. It will have horrible fallout, but it will not last for as long as some of the other crises lasted. And I expect there to be a regeneration of activity, and that will delay everything. And I think it will probably make people think harder about where their money is going. We've always been interested in what we call deep technology, i.e. technology that really makes a material difference to an industry in some way or other. So we're looking at transformative opportunities. And I think that supporting that kind of activity, as opposed to perhaps more frivolous but nevertheless profitable activity, I hope will be one of the outcomes of this crisis.
And when we think about sort of the investment horizon, short-term versus long-term, there will be a number of LPs out there who have previously only invested in the liquid markets. Is there perhaps a case for moving towards private markets, given the huge volatility experienced across public markets just now?
Yes, of course. I mean, fundamentally, the advantage of private markets is governance. The agent, as it were, representing the LP's capital is us, and we're on the board. So we're not remote and trying to read or interpret the communications that are coming out of the company as carefully crafted as they are with public companies. But we're right in there in the board meetings, helping the management figure out what to do strategically. And this means that we have much greater influence and we have much greater knowledge of what's actually going on. Now, I think this enables private companies to be more nimble, react better, take more radical action, and ironically, but yet, and this is important, not have the same impact on valuation. Because the valuation process, although it's very complex and difficult, is unlikely to be governed by a daily oscillation in a share price, but much more over the medium term. And therefore, you'll see a combination of much better governance and much less price volatility in your ownership of private assets.
Anne Glover, CEO of Amadeus Capital Partners, many thanks for joining us today on The Alternative Angle.
Thank you.